And we're off. So the topic today is what to do with broadband now that you have it. And our first presenter is Alan, and he can introduce himself from Open Broadband.
Okay, thanks, Doug. Alan Fitzpatrick, one of the board members for NC Broadband Matters. So great to be with you today. I run a ISP called Open Broadband. We're North Carolina owned and operated. We also operate in some other nearby states, and we do everything from residential to business to Wi-Fi zones. So we concentrate on underserved areas. So as broadband gets more widely deployed, there's a lot of new applications on the forefront. So one of the first is you see more and more broadband at the farm. So these are just a few examples in Rowan County that now have broadband that didn't have before. They were operating on DSL or satellite internet. And it's interesting, the farms not only have the ability to just use it for themselves, for security cameras and sensors and monitoring temperatures and so forth and chicken coops, but they also serve as hubs for the community. So the Wetmore Farm example on the left is actually a hub for several surrounding homes. So it enables broadband to get out to more of their neighbors as well. So farms are a great use case. And the CEFS, which is Center for Environmental Farming Systems, it's a program I believe we covered once before on a previous webinar, but it's a partnership of NC State and North Carolina Agriculture, Department of Agriculture. And it's one of the important centers in the country, really, for research, extension, and education in sustainable agriculture. So having broadband allows them to leverage the cameras and sensors and robots and machine learning on the farm. So it's enabling those sorts of things. And we had an opportunity to go visit them with our partners from Microsoft and just saw the amazing things that they were doing. So if you ever get a chance to go there, please do so. The next slide talks about a program. If you want to go ahead and thanks, Doug. There's a program in North Carolina by the FarmWork Health Program and NC Agri-Medicine Institute to basically provide internet connectivity for migrant farm workers during the season. And if you're wondering why migrant farm workers would need to have broadband, think of all the times that the farm may want to communicate with them. You know, emergencies, outbreaks, information that needs to be shared with the workers, telemedicine applications. I mean, just because migrant workers are on the farm doesn't mean they don't need access to the healthcare and resources that are available. English as a second language is something that could be achieved online classes, and just, you know, connecting with family and friends that are remote. So if you're a migrant worker, you know, there's this feeling of, you know, isolation or loneliness when you're away from home. So this is just a really wonderful program in North Carolina. And we're starting to see and have been involved with several farms that have offered this to their migrant workers. And without broadband, this wouldn't be possible.
And Alan, this is Doug. I'm just going to jump in. This is also a massive benefit to the farmers because they found that if they don't have broadband, they're not competitive as far as attracting migrant workers to their farm. And so they all want it to compete with the other farms. So
definitely a great program. The next area that we're seeing more of is, and my apologies for the slide format here, but it's low-income housing. So the image here is actually in Goldsboro. It's the Housing Authority for the City of Goldsboro. And they're providing free internet via Wi-Fi to all the residents. And they can actually track when people log in. They can see what the usage is. There's a little, you know, sign-in page on the right side on somebody's phone. But the basic principle here is everybody needs to have access to the internet. And just because people are in a low-income environment and may not be able to afford their own plan, the housing authority is making it available to them. Certainly, having the ACP, Affordable Connectivity Program, benefits is very helpful now, but having the housing group itself provide the internet is just a nice amenity for all the residents. So we're seeing this in more and more places in several states. So this is just one here in North Carolina. Public spaces has always been a popular way to expand broadband. So these are just a couple of park photos. The one on the left is in Mecklenburg County, and the one on the right is in Granville County. But people are expecting to be online no matter where they are. And if you're on your phone, you basically have internet coverage everywhere. But if you want to use a larger screen device, you know, your only option on a laptop is, you know, you're going to set up your phone as a hotspot. But if you really don't want to use your phone as a hotspot and you just want to use a laptop or a large tablet when you're in an environment, Wi-Fi is a great amenity for that. And we've also seen communities and towns use Wi-Fi as a means of capturing visitor information. So you can see when people are logging in, you can ask them for their zip code, you can track events. So if you're doing an event at the park or a downtown event and you want to measure, you know, audience size and engagement, that monitoring those Wi-Fi connections is a way of doing that while also providing an amenity. But getting that broadband deployed out there enables that to happen. We're seeing more and more entrepreneurship activities revolving around increased access to broadband. The pictures I have on the screen are from a company called Druid Ag. So they specialize on indoor farming. So you can see them growing some plants indoors. They have an AI model, the AI software, and it analyzes crops 24/7 for signs of plant health. They check for pests, not quite so much of an issue indoors, but obviously outdoors it is, plant diseases. And, you know, soil consistency and moisture and making sure that everything is optimized for the plant growth. And this data can all be made available over the camera that they have as part of their program. And those cameras are all internet connected. So having the ability to have broadband to a farm or to an indoor facility like this just enables this software to monitor the plants and improve the yields of what they're growing. So I thought this was a really interesting application right here in North Carolina. The company is called Druid Ag. Other use cases of broadband, we're seeing more in the innovation space. There's an interesting company called Advocations. It happens to be in Charlotte. They work with people with disabilities. And they essentially match people up with inclusive companies that basically structure their jobs to accommodate those with disabilities. So they focus on recruitment, staffing, training, and support. They have a large business community that supports their job candidates, and they do a lot of training, as you would imagine. And all of that training and access requires broadband. So they're a big user. The Innovation Barn is the example on the right. And that is a organization that's focused on sustainability and the circular environment. So circular means basically reusing and repurposing things we may normally throw away. So repurposing plastics and repurposing other materials, whether it's wood or steel or other types of things. It's an amazing facility that focuses on that whole reuse aspect. And they require internet to do a lot of what they do. And they're very pro-business. While they have a very, you know, economic or environmental focus, they also have the economic focus. And, you know, how do they reuse resources in a pro-business approach? So some interesting concepts. And healthcare is one of the areas that you're seeing more and more use of broadband. A few use cases here I put on the slide. Metrolina Association for the Blind is deploying devices to people's homes to help the visually impaired. And those devices need to be tied to the internet. So as broadband becomes more widely deployed, it allows them to expand their reach in the services for the community. Palmetto Care Connections is actually in South Carolina, but they're doing some interesting work with telehealth, particularly in the low-income communities in South Carolina. And in order to do telehealth, broadband's required, of course. And the other example I have here on the right, Vidant, is a healthcare organization that many in North Carolina are familiar with. This particular sign came from an airport facility where they had an emergency medevac unit, and they had to have high-speed internet there in order to fulfill their services and to be responsive to the needs for the emergency medevac. So these are, you know, some people and organizations in very rural areas that, as broadband is becoming more available, it's allowing them to really function better as an organization and serve more people. The last slide I have here is just on community centers. So having broadband more widely deployed allows for different centers to become the hubs of their communities. I mentioned a farm earlier, kind of serving in that example. These are some examples. One is a church on the left that is serving as kind of a hub for the homes up and down the street nearby. And the one on the right is the Farr Family Learning Center in Dudley, North Carolina, that they recently did a ribbon opening. And a family learning center involves, you know, training and learning events, and it's all online, and there's computers and kids that are there taking the studies. So broadband was required in order to do this. And this was in Dudley, which was an area that was pretty underserved originally before the center went in. So broadband made these things possible.
All right. So thanks, Alan. I think Mark is next, if you want to take over the slides, sure. Mark. All right. Thanks, Alan.
Yep. So we've got a long way to go and a short time to get there for any of you Smokey and the Bandit fans. And so I'm going to go through these relatively quickly. But yeah, so I thought about several different topics and wanted to talk about one that is just near and dear to my heart, and that is elder care. And so this is something where I am actively using broadband today, and it is just an integral and just completely necessary part of, you know, what happens today. And if we don't have it, there are times where it's not viable, then that really hurts. And we'll go through that. The other two, sensing, and this is specifically using fiber as a sensor. And so we're fiber's being used as a sensor, but not broadly in telecommunications-based networks. And so we're going to talk, that's something that is kind of on the cusp. And then the last, going to show a little video about just an introduction to quantum networks, because that is something that is extremely exciting, but we're extremely early stages there. But heading into elder care, my father is 88 years old. He is an organic chemistry professor. You can see on the right-hand side, he wrote a book about organic chemistry professor, and he has Alzheimer's, and Alzheimer's is a pretty tough disease. But one of the things that's also very interesting is that he is a music lover, and specifically classical music and Broadway. And so, how can I help him? So I live in North Carolina. He lives in assisted living in the Atlanta area. And so broadband has just been extremely important for me to be able to help him in a number of different ways. And, you know, there are different tools that do similar functions, but what I'm showing here is the Amazon Echo Show. And the Echo Show has a drop-in feature where you basically say, Alexa, drop in on, you know, and in his case, I call him Daddy. And so drop in on Daddy, and then boom, there he is. But one thing that's very critical is that requires upstream bandwidth. And also, we have found that different versions of these have different levels of resolution, and the higher the resolution, the more upstream bandwidth you actually require. So this is something that is extremely important. You know, with this device, we can also use this as a picture book, and you can see the picture. This is from a trip that we took to Israel last summer, where we were in Jerusalem, but you know, we scroll through various pictures. And from here, I'm going to talk about curated video lists. So, you know, I've been able to set up, he loves James Bond, World War II, and Sherlock Holmes. And so have set up a curated video list for him so his caregivers can help pick out content that is helpful for him and also potentially help to limit exposure to any content that potentially could be triggering for him. So one of the things that has been just really vital or what you know, to him is the use of programmed music. So it's in Alexa or in the Echo app, you can see these screenshots. There are little routines that you can put in place. And the first one that I'm showing here is playing Beethoven music between 9 and 10:30. And so I've automatically programmed that he wakes up and he gets to hear Beethoven, and that, you know, helps to put him at ease. It also, I've got it set up so it plays a separate musical every afternoon. So I've set that up to go from, you know, 1 o'clock to 2:30 every afternoon. And he loves Broadway music, so he gets to hear that in those times that he's back in his room. And you can see, you know, just the little bit of programming that it takes to do that. It's actually pretty easy to make that happen. So one other thing from an elder care standpoint that is extremely important is sleep monitoring. And so sleep is a vital component really for all of us, but also for Alzheimer's patients as well. And so I've set up some Arlo cameras with motion and sleep detection or motion and sound detection in order to monitor his sleep. So, you know, this has been just vital because I've also found, you know, with no one in the room, the assisted living facility would come in for 2-hour checks, and those 2-hour checks are kind of cursory. And so what I learn what his patterns are, and then I can use those patterns to help do some troubleshooting and help provide his assisted living facility and the caregivers some guidance on ways to potentially help him. So I thought I would talk about these from a near-term perspective standpoint. As we go switching into a medium-term perspective, Fiber has a tremendous capability for very, very intricate sensing, using Fiber actually as a sensor itself. Now, I'm not going to go through all these applications, but there is distributed acoustic sensing, distributed temperature sensing. There's also distributed strain sensing. And all of these are ways and different applications where Fiber is being used today. But in a lot of these cases, these are relatively specialized applications. One thing that is, you know, getting relatively close to being able to deploy in a broader sense is backhauled remote sensing. Whereas if you have a telecommunications network, and then you can do sensing of a pretty intricate nature over your existing PON network. So the same networks that you're operating, you know, fiber to the home, you could also use those, and you can put in a little bit more sensitive fiber. And what this more sensitive fiber can do is it can enable you to keep track of you know, various types of things. So this was a field trial that was done over a 38-kilometer network. That was a combination. I think it was a standard network plus PON. And what is interesting about this is you can actually, and it's kind of tough to see here, but you can see as someone walked from 106 feet away to 108 feet to 6 feet away, you can see actually every individual footstep that's taking place. And you can also see where walking and jumping is taking place very distinctively. Just using, and this was 30 feet away from where the fiber was. So you can see that it's, you know, an extremely sensitive sensor. So this is a potential application that is, you know, kind of a little bit early for commercial application, but it's, you know, it's something that is, you know, that brings the promise of, you know, the fiber networks that we currently have just for today. And the last thing I wanted to talk about was quantum networks and applications. We are in extremely early days, so consider that we're maybe in the 80s or the 90s relative to the internet. But if you see you know, what has happened with the internet, you see what's happened with AI, just the concept of quantum, and you can't go through this in like minutes, but the concept of quantum really has the capability of just putting all of these technologies on steroids. And from what here I'd like to do is just show, there was an announcement about the nation's first commercially developed quantum network, and that was with EPB in Chattanooga. And so what I wanted to do was share a video that they have on their website. So you guys would be able to go out and see this. And let me just... I think I have that up and ready to roll. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show a little bit of it, and I'm also going to skip through a little bit of it as well. And so are you guys getting sound?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm trying to figure out how to get the bar out of the way so I can actually start the thing. Okay, here we go.
Quantum technology represents a new frontier for breakthrough applications that will make our lives safer and healthier while opening new possibilities we can only imagine. Our challenge is bringing quantum technologists together to accelerate commercialization in the United States. What if there was a real-world quantum network for developing new quantum technologies? What if it was easily accessible by industry, governments, and academia? What if this quantum network was ideally suited for collaboration and validating that different quantum technologies will work together while ensuring that everyone keeps their own intellectual property and data? Introducing EPB Quantum Network, powered by Qubitekk, America's first commercially available quantum network designed for running equipment and applications in an established fiber optic environment. Built on an award-winning partnership to develop cybersecurity applications for the U.S. power grid, our team includes some of America's foremost quantum technologists, network designers, and engineers.
This is a ring-and-spoke fiber optic network architecture. We have a number of nodes that are interconnected through a bundle of fiber optic cables containing about 200 individual fiber optic strands. On the network, we have equipment hubs where you have specialized quantum equipment that can be reconfigured by the users. And then we also have user nodes where the user can bring their equipment and connect to the network.
You know, I think what's different about...
So I'm going to fast forward a little bit to a little bit further into the video.
Co-development. The concept here is that you don't have to build 100% of the solution. 90% of what a lot of applications need are already present on this quantum network. They just need to bring their extra 10%, the piece that they make.
EPB Quantum Network, powered by Qubitekk, is a configurable fiber optic environment equipped with the latest foundational quantum network technologies, including photonic qubit sources, four parallel qubit channels, single photon counting detectors, quantum-compatible fiber optic switches, and a flexible software-defined network architecture.
This is a big deal. It's a piece of permanent infrastructure that's going to accelerate the development, the adoption, and the integration of commercial quantum products.
I think it's just that the possibilities are unlimited.
In the future, countries that do not master quantum computing are going to be at a tremendous disadvantage, and I believe that we've created here the place for companies that want to ensure that doesn't happen.
We'll enter a quantum age in the next 20 years,
and that really means that we have to be thinking beyond just today and trying to bridge towards tomorrow.
So I'm going to stop there because I'm at the end of my time, but I'd like to go ahead and turn it back over so we have enough time for at least a little bit of questions. So, Doug, I'll turn it back over to you, and we'll head on to whoever is next.
Greg is up next.
Hey, everybody. My name is Greg Coltrane, and I am VP of Business Development for Wilkes Communications and River Street Networks, and we serve fiber-based broadband and fixed wireless solutions, as well as security, hosted voice, and a suite of other services across five states here in the East. So I wanted to talk with you just a little bit today about really where we are with the advancements of broadband and the types of technologies that we can use. And then some of our other panelists are going to speak into additional pieces of what I'm going to be discussing now later. So if we could go to the next slide, this slide here basically shows broadband consumption across the United States since 2010 to the year 2020. And you can see really a ramp up almost to 350 meg of service that we're using in our daily consumption of the internet. And on the next slide, you'll see where it actually takes that up to the year 2023, where we are now. And all of this information came from allconnect.com. But you can just see that we're eating more and more broadband on a daily basis and consuming the pipes. As the pipes gotten bigger for us and our homes and our businesses, we've all started adapting to new technologies that are using that medium. And so if we can go to the next slide, I'll speak to you just a little bit about the Internet of Things. And so in our world today, you go to the box stores and you can buy all kinds of devices that you can connect to your internet. But those things are really starting to advance and take us in completely new directions. So when you're in your home or business today, you can connect just about anything in your home. You can buy a new one of that in, on the market, and it will connect to the internet so that you can do various different things with it. But not just on the residential aspect. From a business standpoint, if you've got a high-speed broadband connection, if you're a farm, you can use that farming equipment to bring it back in and download data analytics from your farm equipment so that you can understand better about your precision agriculture. You can have drones flying over your property of your business, capturing images about your production or things that you're doing. If it's an animal farm, you can keep an eye on the animal and the livestock, and that data can come back and download into more analytical technology that you have so that you can better manage your business. You can track inventory with these devices. And Will is going to speak in a little bit, and he's going to give you some other items in this category. Also, when you talk about your home and having interactive home technology, Mark was speaking a few minutes ago about the types of devices that you can use in the home for elder care and music and playing devices that can all be synchronized together in the home. I can remember years ago when everybody thought, you know, you had a really nice house if you had an intercom system throughout the home. If somebody could come to the door and press a button and it would play a chime in your home and you could go from anywhere in your house to a little intercom on the wall and talk to them outside, that was super cool. Well, now we've got these wireless devices that you can connect in your home, and there's a lot of different market brands out there. You've got Amazon has the whole Alexa suite of services. You've got Google Home. Apple has their whole solution. And so you pick one and you kind of land on it, and then you can use all of their technologies throughout your home. But the nice thing about it is there's universal standards that are being created. So a lot of the devices you can buy will connect to any of these type technologies. So you can control things in your home, like listening to music. More technology advances have occurred in artificial intelligence. And now these devices are getting smarter. So they see the weather changing in your area and they send you an announcement to your home to let you know that it's getting ready to rain in 10 minutes. Or there's going to be a wind advisory this evening. Just a lot of really neat things to help us be more prepared for the things that are going on around us. You can control lights. You can control heat lamps for your animals outside during cold weather with a click of a button on a smartphone or a tablet, or with your voice when you're near some of these devices. Indoor and outdoor lighting are great for emergencies. I can, in my home today, I can call my device audibly and say, turn on all the lights. And I have a light in every room in my house, including all my security lights outside of my home. And they will all come on at the same time. And that way, if there was an emergency in the home, I could illuminate everything and see everything at night. Rental properties are using these types of technologies to turn on and off their water for their rental properties. So cold weather's coming and you want to turn the water off. You can turn on and off hot water heaters with remote devices. There's thermostat controls. You can unlock and lock doors. You can reprogram key codes for doors so that your renters can actually access the rental property. You don't even have to drive out there to do it. And even smart devices around your entertainment. So I'll get into those in just a minute. If we'll switch to the next slide. So the nice thing about all those things I just mentioned is you can control them all from one place. And so you download an app that corresponds with the device that you've chosen for your home or business. And then you can start to integrate your lighting and your climate control and your security access. And you can also control gadgets from this device. Like you can turn on and off children's internet access on their devices or create date and time access, which you'll hear about here in just a moment. You can even have your appliances now smart enough that when the buzzer goes off, and I'll tell you, I have my girls, I got twin 15-year-olds, and they help do laundry a lot of the times. But they always want to make excuses for why the laundry didn't get done because they didn't hear the buzzer go off. And so now you can actually make the device in the home play an announcement that the laundry has finished so that they'll come and switch it out. You can connect your routers and devices in the home so that you can control how they interact with these devices. So the technology is out there. If we just engage in using it, we can really change the way that we live on a daily basis. Next slide, please. So when you talk about other home technologies, so there are a lot of devices available in the box store today. You can participate in Ring or Arlo or Blink. All of these programs or all of these companies provide security around the surveillance aspect. So when you alarm your system, the cameras operate a certain way so that if they see something that's off, they can send a screen pop to your cell phone or your tablet in your home or even a control device that you may have mounted on the wall in your home stationary. But there are all kinds of options. You've got self-install options. You know, if packages are delivered to your house, you can get notifications from your camera that actually senses and sees a package sitting beside your door. If people are moving around in the home, you can get sensors to let you know there's activity in a room. If your children are coming home from school, you can kind of see or get an alarm to let you know that they've come in the back door. Just a lot of control factors there that you can configure. There are also devices that you can buy that if you're a little bit concerned about, you know, I've got cameras and I don't want somebody spying on me. There are devices that you can buy where you have a DVR, a digital video recorder that you mount in the home or business, and you link all the cameras back to it, and it records whatever is being recorded there. You can access it remotely with an app on your phone if you want to. So just tons of options. Next slide, please. We'll talk a little bit about some yard technologies. And these are things that are kind of cool to me. I don't know about you guys, but with the cost of eggs, we put chickens in the backyard a few years ago. We keep them in kind of a containment area, but we have a lot of prowlers out there that are wanting to come in and eat our chickens. So one technology specifically is an automated chicken door for your hen house that can be controlled remotely. That broadband providers now offer extended Wi-Fi solutions that you can put outside of the home or office, so that you extend that Wi-Fi as far as 900 to 1,000 feet away from the home or business. That lets you put a door in that you can control date and time when it opens and closes, if you want it to open at sunrise and sunset. If you're away on vacation and you're not sure if the door's jammed, you can see in the app whether or not the door opened or closed today. Another item is the Rainbird or other devices that are used to handle irrigation and watering of your yard, where you can see how much water consumption you're using and what parts of the yard you want to water at what times. And then if you're a bird enthusiast, another example is this little device here on the right, where you can actually put a bird feeder outside and get high definition 4K video pictures and live video of your favorite birds as they come and sit down to eat. So just a very unique time that we're in. Next slide, please. Another item that's really important is how our entertainment is evolving. A particular item that I'm showcasing here is DirecTV. This particular solution is moving away from the model where you had to have a satellite dish in the yard and you had to worry about rain fade. They still offer that solution, but they also now have a via the internet connection where you can see live TV on up to 20 devices in your home. And that's going to require a lot of bandwidth. So if you've got devices in your home that are using 4K content, you're going to need about 25 to 50 meg for that device to get that high definition quality video. And so when you look at connecting 20 devices, you're going to be using 500 to 1,000 meg of internet if you got 20 devices. But I'm just trying to put that in perspective for you. You can have whole home or whole device DVR where you record things in the cloud, and you can watch them on your smartphone or your tablet inside or outside of the home. You can enjoy video on demand through such solutions like this. They have 72-hour rewind. So all your favorite shows, you can go back 72 hours and pick them up, which is really good for the news because you might come in 30 minutes late and you want to catch the local news. So you have that available. And you can pause, rewind, and fast forward and restart live TV all over the internet now through devices such as this. And lastly, the next slide. One solution that businesses are really taking advantage of is hosted phone technology or hosted phone service. Another term for this is voice over IP. And basically, this technology rides across the internet. And instead of the traditional model where you would have like a brain for your phone system in your business that gets installed in a little closet in the back and all your phones connect to it, this actually, you plug it into your internet connection or your network that's internet enabled, and it screams across the internet and pairs up to a host device on the internet. And it lets you have all the same modern, or it gives you the modern technologies that are available today with the same look and feel of traditional commercial phone systems. So you get high definition sound quality. There's cordless devices you can use. There are expansion modules. So if you've got multiple extensions or a call center, you can have those same features and flexibilities. There's earpieces so that customer service reps and support people, specialists, can have access to talk hands-free. Some other things that are cool are SMS queuing and live chat, which gives you the ability to take the conversation a step further from being an audible telephone conversation to an actual chat configuration, or you can talk in via text messaging on the telephone, and it all ties back into the same controller that you could then make a phone call to them. If you've got large call centers, you can get reporting and information out of that call center based on the number of calls in the queue. It's just amazing to me how businesses are running using these hosted voice solutions today. And then you can take it on the fly with you. So if you're in the office talking on your traditional business phone, you have one button that you can click and your cell phone will ring and it transfers the call. And the person that you're talking to doesn't even know that you switched phones, and you walk out the door and head off to wherever you need to go and still carry on your conversation. Automatic attendants are still there, so you can have your customers receive prompts where they can get to the right department. And each phone gets its own direct dialed extension so that there's a direct number and an extension so that you can call between phones in an office environment. And I could call and talk to Mark Boxer 15 minutes down the road, or I could talk to Will 2 hours away. And we're all in the same phone, like concept of the same phone system. So there's some really cool technologies here. And I think my last slide is a thank you. And that's what I have. I appreciate you guys today.
Will is next, but before Will starts, I just want to say that the remote cameras let me figure out that our neighborhood bear in Western North Carolina came running and sat under the exhaust outlet for the dryer every time we ran the dryer. We had no idea. So it's like, that was pretty cool stuff. All right, you're up, Will.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. As Doug said, my name is Will Aycock, and I work with Greenlight Community Broadband down in Wilson, North Carolina. And we're here to talk about what next when, you know, you've got broadband and what comes next. And after listening to, you know, everything that's come and all this good information, one of the, I think, natural reactions to what comes next is to say, I'd like to go back, please. I'd like to go back to 1995. I'd like to go back to three TV channels and one telephone and not have to deal with all of this complexity. And I think that is a natural reaction to a lot of people, shockingly, and it's something as a community broadband provider that we're very aware of. So for us, what now is answered by staying focused on why we wanted the infrastructure in the first place. And very much so for us, that was because this wasn't necessarily Wilson had to be first with fiber in North Carolina, but we didn't want anyone left behind. And that continues to drive forward in all that we do. And so there were three missions with under that desire to not be left behind. And the first was really to help improve the quality of life for our citizens. So we've already heard myriad examples of the technologies that exist out there, things that can clearly help people day to day in their quality of life. My 90 something year old grandmother still lives independently out on our family farm. And, you know, one of the challenges she's had is that in that large old farmhouse, somebody might ring the doorbell and she'd simply not hear it. And it was a great concern to her that someone might be coming by and she not hear them. So through some of these technologies, we've been able to put a solution in place that has fixed that problem for her. She would have never been able to do that on her own. And not everybody has a nephew or grandson who can come, has the time, the availability or even the expertise to come and do those things. So that's where we see our role in what comes next. We have to be a trusted local partner who can vet technologies, who can explain technologies, who can make them accessible to everyone. I think sometimes there's a presumption, especially for those of us that are technologists, that this is easy. This stuff exists. It's out there. I can go to Best Buy or wherever and you know, do this stuff myself, or I can hire someone to do it for me. But there are broad populations, especially in areas that have been historically non-served or underserved, that may not have that access and resource. So for us, part of what comes next is focusing on those quality of life applications of broadband and making them accessible to our customers. Next slide. So the next aspect of why we got into this in the first place was really improving the delivery of city services. So we're a full service utility, electric, gas, water, broadband, plus all the traditional city services, police, fire, planning, parks and recreation, and so forth. And we could see that technology was going to be a huge component more effectively and efficiently managing all of these services that we deliver to our citizens. And, you know, phase one of this broadband, what next when you're talking about connecting the full community is the simple monitoring and control. Being able to know, have situational awareness. A fiber optic network is much like a nervous system that stretches out across the community, and you collect these signals, and then you're able to know what's going on, know what the water level is at the dam, know what the level of trash is and various containers that need to be emptied, know what the demand is on any particular commercial meter at any particular point in time. And then you can start to do some real-time control. You can do some load switching. You can send folks out to be responsive to this data. Well, that's really just the absolute tip of the iceberg when we're talking about what next with broadband. The real what next when we talk about this connected community concept is the data itself. I know you're going to hear a little bit later on about AI, but, you know, one of the requisites for this, you know, these iterative AI systems is the input data. And so now once you have all these connected devices, you have this just plethora of information that is almost impossible to take full advantage of as a human. So what do you have to do? You have to build the systems, the people, the technology, the teams to take all of this data that's coming back from your smart connected community and do useful things with it. Like, for example, load loss analysis and electric distribution grid to figure out where we lose the power and why, and start to proactively plan what you're doing in terms of maintenance and upgrades to systems. Another really straightforward example we've had experience here is, you know, cameras everywhere. Well, to derive value from these sensors, you have to be able to get to the data you need. And if you've ever had the experiences I've had of trying to go back and or through multiple feeds from multiple cameras to try to ascertain what happened in a certain sequence of events, it is labor intensive and very difficult and prone to missing a lot. So you have to build the systems that can then take that data, video being an obvious one, to say, hey, I need to know this vehicle, where it went throughout the day from this period of time to this period of time. And, you know, with the technologies that we're able to put into place, it can automate a lot of that, improving the efficiencies that we're providing service to the community with and freeing up people to be able to do what we do best, which is to interact with the citizens. Next slide, please. And the final of the three pillars of why we got into broadband in the first place was supporting the economic health of our community. We understood that we didn't want to be left behind in terms of economic development, and a lack of telecommunications infrastructure at this point very clearly has been shown to have that sort of negative effect. But the infrastructure is not enough. And what we've learned in these 15 odd years is you have to meet people where they are. And that means a couple of things. That means first, physically being out and being present in your community, going out and explaining to people what you do, what your services are, why you're there, helping find out what their needs are, and then crafting programming that meets those needs. And that's the other component of meeting people where they are. So right now we have programming all the way from Navigation East, which is the most rudimentary of basic digital literacy programming, all the way up through Grow with Google, which is a grant-funded program from the North Carolina Main or from the Main Street program, where we're able to take small businesses and run them through a variety of technology courses to help them improve the way they're leveraging technology to grow their business, all the way up to our Riot Foundations and our Riot Accelerator program. And fun fact, I didn't know it until we got on the call, but Druid, the company that Alan mentioned, is actually going through our Riot Accelerator cohort in Wilson right now. So again, and in order to support that economic health of the community, we've got to grow the next generation of businesses. And so you got to bring that programming to bear. So at the end of the day, just stay focused on why you felt the infrastructure was important in your environment, and then find ways to drive that mission further forward, as I hope I've communicated we're doing here in Wilson. So with that, I just say thank you and look forward to the next set of slides.
All right, so I'm Doug Dawson, and I'm the president of CCG Consulting. I'm also the current president of NC Broadband Matters, and it's good to talk to you all today. If you have any follow-up questions for us, stick them in the chat. There's none in there yet, but we'd be glad to answer questions. I want to talk about three very specific applications. We could all talk about this stuff all day. There's so many things going on. We haven't touched on a tenth of it, to be honest. The first one is RFID Everywhere. And this is a technology that's been around a long time, but it's really changed in the last couple of years because it's all moved to the cloud. And so, and what I mean by that, and let me give you a really good example. My local Lowe's store now has an inventory of every single thing in the store online, live all the time. And if somebody buys one, the quantity of how many are left in the store instantly changes. You can watch it in real time. And this is great stuff because if I want to buy something, I can find out if it's actually in stock before I run there. If it's getting down to a low quantity, I can go ahead and buy it and have them set it aside before I get there. And that's just one store of how they do that. Not only is that really amazing for the public because they run one of these now for every single one of their stores, it's a separate system, but it also lets that store know exactly what's being sold in real time. They get an amazing amount of feedback on what the public wants certain times of the year and all those sort of things. And it's allowed them to really change to make sure that there's more of what people want and less of what people aren't going to buy. I mean, before even just a few years ago, that was incredibly hard to do. The same technology has drastically changed the supply chain management. So manufacturers have exactly those same sort of tools. They know exactly what's being made on the manufacturing floor and when it's going to be finished. They know they can match all that with orders. They can match where everything is in the middle of having deliveries out to people. And even though these things have been around for a long time, again, just in the last two or three years, and probably prompted by the pandemic, they've gotten massively more sophisticated. And it's only because of broadband. Again, these are all done in data centers now. You know, they're not done to computers at the place because the things you have to track are just too monstrously large to make any sense of it, as Will said. So it's not just gathering the data, but it's making sense of the data, which is where the real value comes in. It also goes down to the local level. The dry cleaner in my neighborhood uses RFID, and that way they can instantly find your darn stuff when you come in and ask for it. It's like, here it is. I mean, it tells them exactly on the rack where your clothes are, because that otherwise, you know, they're always in the past been looking around. Asset tracking is a big one. You know, broadband networks, when you build them, just keeping track of what you've built out in the field. An RFID tag in the field is literally a physical thing. You put it on a device, and so And then you can get feedback from that either like you can either do it with a sensor so you can always keep track of it, or you can always go out at any time and just, you know, wave a smartphone at it and get feedback from it. And so people that have outdoor assets use this technology to keep what's going on. And in fact, my last example is one I mostly have a forestry degree that I've been working on, and I love trees and forests. Forest guys are now going out and putting a tracker on each tree that they're interested in tracking, and they can come back year after year and they can now easily find the same tree to see what happened between last year and this year, or this year and 5 years ago. And so they're, for the first time, they're getting much easier feedback at the specific tree level instead of the forest level they've never had before. And forest majors are just incredibly excited about this. So this RFID technology is all of a sudden everywhere, even though it's been around a decade, it's all of a sudden actually being used everywhere. The next thing is smart appliances, which we've talked about before. So I won't get too far into this, but there's a couple of these that I put on here because they're so interesting. A smart mirror looks like a mirror. You can put a full-length mirror in your bedroom so that you can, you know, see how you look when you're dressed. You can also then play your TV on it, or you can play anything that you can look at. You can play your security cameras. You can play anything you can pull up to your iPad. You can pull the apps up. You can pull up, anything. So it's completely a screen that doesn't look like a screen until you turn it on. And so it looks like a mirror until you turn the screen on. And even when you do that, you can still see in the mirror. So, you know, that's a cool technology. When I say smart trash can, this is the first step towards home robots. There's now a trash can you can buy that not only lets you know when it's full, but it will tie the bag off and close it up for you and make it ready to pick up out of the thing. And once you pull the bag out, it automatically slides the next bag in. It gets you out of the trash can business. It's a home trash can robot. I mean, this is really cool stuff. Smart faucets have also just changed a lot in the last 2 years. This is a faucet where you can say, I need a third of a cup of water at 100 degrees, and it'll do it for you. And it can be voice activated. It can be smartphone activated. It also is touch activated. You touch the faucet, turn it on, turn it off. And so we not only now have devices that are enabled by Wi-Fi, but they're getting really much smarter that are truly useful to people. And anybody who cooks a lot is going, I'd really want to have my hot water come out just when I tell it to. I mean, that's really cool stuff. To me, the best thing on the entire market is the thing called Wemo Smart Plug. It's probably the cheapest thing you can buy. It's $20. You can put this on any outlet, and all of a sudden now you can address anything you plug into it. You can turn things on and off, you know. So this is one of the ways that you make your house smarter everywhere, is I don't care what it is. You can turn anything that you can plug in the wall can now be controlled from your smartphone to turn it on and off. That's the device itself. That's what you're actually talking to. It's really pretty neat. I save most of my time to talk about artificial intelligence. This is in the news everywhere right now, and this is a monstrous deal because this is going to change a huge amount of number of things we do. And the reason this is on here for computer applications is this is completely in the cloud. And so ChatGPT is just one of the other companies who have announced the new AI software. You know, Google has one. There's several others who have come out. The whole point of these is we're at the very infant stage, and already there's some pretty amazing things going on with it. Already, these things on the screen, people are using them for. And 3 or 4 years from now, it's going to be a much longer list of things. I read an article where English teachers are figuring out that this thing can grade papers. It'll pick out every grammar and spelling mistake, mark them for you. And if you wanted to, it'll even suggest a grade, even though most teachers still reserve that from themselves. But that saves them from reading all the I once was paid to grade freshman English papers. I can tell you it's painful. So at least it gets that check the grammar stuff out of the way, right? I talked to a horse academy in Arizona a few weeks ago, and they were already using an earlier version of artificial intelligence. And they have developed software, not just this farm, but they're part of a network that actually uses cameras to watch students riding horses and then analyzes what they do. And at the end of the lesson, they can then go sit down at a computer and it tells them all the things that they did right, wrong, or that he can improve on. And so, and according to the woman who runs this farm, it's about 90% as good as what an expert like her is in watching folks. And so, you know, the experts, artificial intelligence will never and never probably never replace a true expert. You know, she's a person who could train an Olympic horse rider, but on a day-to-day basis with a lot of students that can sit there and look at the motion of the horse and look how the person is sitting on it and give them advice. And that's being applied to all sorts of things in the world. And so that's, you know, being used for medical diagnosis and all sorts of other things. Advanced searching is something new. This is not your old Google search. You can come on and say, you know, I want to find, you know, something really obscure. And then I want you to feed it back to me in the following set of tables. I mean, you know, the way that you can now, anything that's on the internet can be searched this way. Google search is very interesting, but when you get 10,000 results back from your search, it's really not all that useful. This actually takes those 10,000 and makes something useful out of it. And that's probably the first place we're going to see it. Microsoft is working very hard to make that part of Bing, which might actually make Bing usable again. So personal recommendations, people are already figuring out that you can use ChatGPT to say, what is the best one of these home devices to buy and why is one better than the other one? It'll come back and give you all the specs and the feedback. You can have it do it in the complete geek talk and give you all the specs, or you can have it boil it down to plain English. And so, you know, so there's just, that's another version of advanced searching. You can use artificial intelligence to brainstorm ideas. We've already learned that artificial intelligence is not creative, but it's really good at finding all the possible ways you can do something that someone else has already talked about somewhere else. And so it gives you a brainstorming session is where you say, what are all my possibilities? And then you talk about them. It can go out and find a lot of those possibilities for you before you get started with it. These are just a few of the minor, none of these are minor because for anyone who uses them, they're really cool and interesting. But I mean, we're just at the very beginning of this. It's going to be the number one use of broadband here for a whole lot of people just 2 or 3 years from now.